This episode of Newton Talks is another in my ongoing strand of interviews with micro-budget filmmakers. Today, I am joined by Caroline Spence and James Smith, who together make up Raya Films, and who have written, produced and directed 5 feature films so far, including Do Something Jake, Cyberlante, Agent Kelly and Surveilled, and they have several more in development. So Caroline and James, it's really good for you to be here. I really appreciate you giving me the time. You've directed 5 feature films since 2015. How did you get started in filmmaking and how are you so prolific? What got you kicked off?
That's always an interesting question. I think we started off by accident, really, didn't we, Caroline? It was basically we got embroiled in a TV program in the Canary Islands called I Want That House, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And this was through my mother, who was selling property at the time. And Caroline got roped into being a presenter on this program, and we actually thought that we could do a better job than the film crew, didn't we? I think that's what it was. It was a weird introduction into the feature film business indirectly from a TV property program.
we did this property program, and then we thought, oh, we can have a go at this. So we started making documentaries, and then from documentaries it sort of like segued into feature films, which is something that we've both always been very passionate about, watching feature films and the film business. And we started writing and writing screenplays and coming up with, James is the ideas man. He's always coming up with a million ideas, and just he throws the ideas at me and I put them into screenplays.
I think we're kind of an unusual kind of couple of indie filmmakers, really. I don't suppose anyone has a real director or formal route into this game, really, if you dig down deep. I mean, I guess there are film schools and various institutions that guide you in certain ways, but generally in the independent film business, everyone finds their way, and we found our way through what were our previous jobs in computers and accountancy and things like that. We didn't like that much, so we had a go at documentaries, and then all sorts of funny things, music videos, corporate videos, and then we kind of found our way with screenwriting through Caroline and then me directing them. And originally we were looking for bigger directors to direct our stuff, but that never transpired. So we went the next best and the cheapest option, which was me.
So let me ask, why did you start in documentaries? Were you making things for other people and corporate videos and things like that? Was that just the natural way to get started, or were there particular subjects you were interested in? Why gravitate towards the documentaries first?
Well, we should sort of just dove in and decided that we wanted to become great sort of historical documentary producers, inspired by what we'd seen on TV, and also decided that, well, we're interested in extreme sports as well. So we just sort of had a go at making those kinds of programs and all those kinds of documentaries, and then actually ended up just self-distributing and screening them ourselves. So Caroline's got the historical writing background and presenting, and I was more on the technical side, the camera side, all that kind of thing, photography, really. So I come from a stills photography background, so we combined our skills, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, I was, I think our very, very first documentary was The Fragile Marsh, was it, James?
Yeah.
Which was whereas I was desperate to be David Attenborough, and we just did this little documentary about our local nature reserve, which is on our doorstep where we used to live in Dorset. And we managed to sell it quite well locally as a DVD. And we tried to sell it to the television, but the television people were, it wasn't good enough for them. So, but we sold it well in the local region. So that was our very, very first foray into it.
I think the problem is that you kind of, it's like I say, everyone finds their way, and we had sort of forays into the TV world, but never really happy with it. It was too much similar to the kind of corporate world from whence we came. And I think, we didn't really, we're too independently minded. And actually, I think you know, it can be a bit of a nasty world in that you come up with a great idea and they say, oh, we're not interested in that, we would never do anything like that, and then 2 years later they're doing just that, and you just wonder whether that was your idea stolen. And that happened a few times, and we didn't like the smell of it, did we, really? So but the indie film world, which we eventually ended up in, is super creative, and it's just got so many different angles and facets that you can dive into, and it's just diverse in a creative way. I'd say you can say, okay, what am I good at, what do I know, let's kind of go into that area and create a feature film or a short film based on what you know.
So it seems to me the British indie scene and the kind of micro indie scene, the micro budget indie scene, is absolutely thriving. I know, you know, we follow each other on Twitter, and we Andrew Elias, and I've done a podcast with him, and it seems to be quite close-knit and highly prolific as well. Lots of people making lots of different films. How have you found negotiating that British scene? Have you done a lot of collaboration? Have you met a lot of other filmmakers?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to cut Caroline off here, but this is a big subject, really, isn't it? And I think the first thing everyone has to ask themselves, and this is something I'm going to bring up actually in the industry over the next few months and years as we all progress, because I think things have changed. It is very vibrant, as you say, but what is an indie or micro indie film? And a lot of films in the UK are calling themselves independent, but actually when you dig deeper, they've got big finance, they've got people like the BFI, Channel 4, the BBC all piling in and still calling themselves independent. Now, is that an independent film? Because I know Chowhandy's films that you just mentioned and ours are definitely independent, because we're funding them through crowdfunding and creating these projects ourselves. I feel we're disadvantaged in some way by these other films that are entering into festivals calling themselves independent, but really I think it's a tiered system, isn't it, really? And good thing about what we're doing is we have full creative freedom, don't you think, Caroline? I mean, it's a different way of working.
Yeah, I mean, I think you say, we us and our, all the other independent filmmakers that we're connected to, that we know of, that are in the micro budget scene, maybe disadvantaged. But on the other hand, if we were tied up with BFI money and BBC money, we might not have the creative freedom that we do have. The disadvantage I do see is the marketing side of things. We can't get our films out there as much as we'd like to, because we don't have the big guns of the national organisations batting for us.
They're all connected, aren't they? They're connected with the press and the media and the festivals, and they all, you know, they can get those films out there. And that kind of level might argue, well, we're making the best films and the best talent, but I would not agree with that, because at all levels it's very subjective, and there's some brilliant films that we've seen through completely independent producers, people that you mentioned, people in these smaller festivals, and they're really excellent. I mean, we were in San Diego and saw some short films over there. I've never been a big fan of short films. I saw some amazing stuff, really, really good, wasn't it?
Yeah, very impressive.
And that was at the one for the smartphone festival that you attended?
Yeah, it's IMFF, it's called International Mobile Film Festival in San Diego, and it's purely smartphone shot stuff. Very interesting.
We went across to San Diego and filmed, surveilled there, and there was some amazing stuff being screened. Features and shorts, and it's always great to attend festivals, I think, because as you just mentioned, it's great to be able to meet other filmmakers and network with them and swap stories about how you're getting on in the industry. So we have met a lot of other filmmakers that way, both in, well, recently in San Diego, but also in the UK.
Yeah, they're really cool. In some of the filmmakers in San Diego got a very different attitude, isn't they? It's kind of, I mean, we're it is true what they say about British people, kind of reserved and a little bit cautious. So we're afraid to be successful and all that. Out there, it's like, wow, I love your film. And they can take a compliment and say, yeah, I loved yours as well. And it's like, yeah, thank you, it was good ones. But it is a very positive environment over there, very yeah, it's different. It's very, they're really buzzed up about anything. And obviously it's close to LA where we were. So we had some people come down from there and they were interested in the filmmaking scene. But, and I think it's good to mix it up because really we've got to compete with the world, and some of the best films are made over there. So, it's, I would say to any filmmaker, if you can just travel, just go to different places, not only in Britain, to different festivals. If you can afford it somehow, get to anywhere.
Well, I haven't seen Surveilled yet. That's next on my list of yours. But I saw Agent Kelly and talking about traveling and internet. You made that, I think, was that in Spain you shot that?
Yeah,
and you want to tell us a little bit about that film. I think it's 2020 you made Agent Kelly. It's quite unusual in that it's just got a very, very, very small cast. Caroline, yourself, you're in it for 98% of the film, it must be. Do you want to tell us about how you conceived of it, how you made it? How did you get on making that movie?
Well, we actually shot it in 2017. It took us that long to release it because we didn't know what we had. We weren't sure whether it was any good or not. But we shot it after Do Something Jake, and we just made it because Do Something Jake took a long time in post-production. It took 3 years. And so we thought we needed to be shooting something else. And James came up with pitched the idea to me in a premiere in at Gatwick.
Did
you did? Yeah, just before we were going to set off to Spain, where we got this old sailing boat down there. He pitched the idea, so we thought, okay, well, let's just give it a go and run around Spain filming this crazy, crazy movie.
So when you were in the Gatwick, that's not the opening scene of the film, is it? So you pretty much made it as you were going along?
Yeah, that is Gatwick where we shot that, the opening scene.
We basically have route when we travel from the Midlands or wherever we are to Gatwick, to Almeria, and then to Malaga sometimes, and then back to the UK. So we said, well, what locations do we have? Well, there you go, you've got them already, except they're out in the street. And we were doing all sorts of crazy things filming in Gatwick, what we did is I set the lens up so that all the people in the background, if you see the film, they're all fuzzed out because I used a lens, with a shallow depth so that you didn't see all these people in the background. Similarly, in Malaga, we were on a train and I did get pulled up by a security guy. He could see I was like swinging this camera around to Caroline and then sort of out into the scenic areas and into the coach, but he stopped me from doing that because obviously I didn't intentionally want to catch people in shot, but they were really tight on security there. So it was really a very interesting experience to film a genuine guerrilla style film. But it is not without its hair-raising moments, I can tell you that.
And that's kind of supported by the plot, really, because Caroline, you play Agent Kelly, who's kind of on the run from whatever organisation, and she's being chased down by various people. The production mirrors the storyline, really, I guess, in that.
Yes, I guess it does, because, it was literally, we were just filming as we took our journey to where we normally go. We were just filming little, scenes along the way. So,
had you performed much acting before? Or is that your first significant? No. Okay.
No, I mean, I'd done drama at school, which was a long time ago. but no, this was my first proper acting gig, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I mean, we did all sorts of crazy things because often Caroline wouldn't be acting, she'd be talking on the phone and then, to someone else who was not in shot. So we had a little audio recordings playing that she could act to. The trouble is they were too fast, so she was like tripping over, treading on the lines of the other actor, and it was a very difficult technical thing. So yeah, we did some shooting in the hotels, and the hotel at Gatwick, we sort of did that kind of scene that you see in the opening of the movie, or near the opening, and then packed all the bags up at 1 o'clock in the morning, and then at 3 o'clock in the morning got the flight to Malaga. Arrived at Malaga,
nowhere to stay,
anywhere to stay, so we were walking through Malaga in really intense heat looking for somewhere to stay, and then had a rest, completely zonked out, and then started filming in that hotel and out in the streets that evening.
but that little scene just goes to show how things can happen fortuitously, because the hotel we would normally stay in Malaga was booked up, so we were traipsing around trying to find this other hotel. So we found this hotel, and we were put on the floor, you know, right at the top of the building. And of course, that lent, you know, it made it so much to film there, made it so much rich, you know, richer aesthetically. Yeah. because of the views we had and the balcony we had and the space we had. We wouldn't have had that had we gone to our usual hotel. So
yeah, we had a stroke of luck a couple of times. Yeah. And you need that, you know, you'll find that people listening in, if they want to go out and film stuff, you know, first thing is be safe and be sensible. And, but, you know, especially if you're on roads and things like that. But, you know, you've got to take the rough with the smooth. There will be things, happy accidents like the one Caroline just mentioned, and then there'll be things that go completely wrong, you know, and some bit of equipment or packing, drop the camera or something. Well, that's the worst scene of all, actually. The weather will, you know, suddenly do something you don't want it to do, and then you've got to adjust your plans. But, so, yeah, it's... I think one of the things I take away from that, though, is holding one's nerve, because I remember, I didn't tell you, Caroline, at the time, but I was quite insecure about what we were actually coming up with here. You know, I think, what the hell is this? Is this a pile of crap, or is it going to be actually any good? But we held our nerve, got through it all, and then roll it on a few years and get through these experiences. And then people are saying, actually, I really like the way that was done, you know, or so you basically, if you do something different, you know, you're introducing different material to people, and you never know how it's going to be perceived. You just have to give it a go.
Can I ask how you did? You know the other cast members, like the other assassin who sent after you. Had you arranged to meet them in Spain, or did you contact them when you got there? What was the situation?
Well, we'd had some sort of scant meeting. We'd never met them in person, but we had some scant.
Didn't know these guys at all.
No, we didn't know them at all. Chris Sanders and Eddie Gallego. So Chris was in the Midlands, I think. We never met him, and Eddie was in Madrid. And we had some Skype meetings, didn't we? You know, talking mm-hmm. generally about the idea, which was crazy. But actually, I spoke to loads of people, and look, as is the case with these independent films, loads of people dropped out, but these two hung on and said they were really interested in this. And they turned out to be really cool people, actually. So, you know, you got to look for good people, and they've got to be committed. And these guys were, and I think they reap the benefits now because they're all over it. And it's a lot of fun as well, you know, definitely.
So that was Agent Kelly. So let's go back to your first film, Do Something Jake, or your first feature film. Now this was crowdfunded. Am I correct in that?
No. It was shot on actually literally zero money. We had the opportunity to house sit in Loughborough in the Midlands for a month, and we thought, well, that, at which point we thought, let's go and make a movie. Let's just try it, you know. Let's see if we can pull some people together to come and make a movie. We can't pay them. We have no money at all, you know, less than we got now, and which isn't much. So, you know, we literally made this on no money, and we started working with, you know, we put call outs locally, and then a charity popped up and said, oh, we want to help you. And we started working. We were working with students and university graduates, and so it was almost like a crowdsourced way of making a film.
It was a very fine line because there's a point whereby we just couldn't get any local help, you know, because people talk about the regions and regional film and all that, and sometimes it can be all right, and sometimes it can be just a non-starter. And we were going for a few weeks trying to get help, and just nothing was happening. But then there was a little bit of luck. Local politician actually put a mention in a newsletter about the film, and then a charity popped up, as Caroline said, and then other people popped up and said, oh yeah, we'll help you out the location, and one thing led to another, and then suddenly we had a really cool team. Back then, it's a little while ago back then, you know, weren't so many films being made in this way. You know, there weren't so many phone films and things like that. So it was a little bit unique, and everyone really embraced it and got stuck in, but it was really tough. And it was one of those films, it was about a day or two where we were about to fly off back to Spain, weren't we? And so we were gonna film something else instead. But we just managed to get a meeting and said, okay, game on. And then we started filming, but it was really tough to actually get it done. The post-production was hell. we were learning as one does, you know, trying to splice this film together with some professional actors and some non-professional, but a crazy, crazy thing.
Mm. I mean, the crowdfunding side of it came when the film was finished. We thought, right, we want to have a big ta-da, a big screening, a big premiere. So that's when the crowdfunding came in to pay for a DCP for the BBFC certificate, which is not cheap, and then to put on a world premiere in the town. So that's what we did.
Tell me about that premiere. So how many people were there? Was it the whole cast and crew? Were the local people there? Tell me about how you set that up and how much fun that was.
Well, that was incredible. It's probably one of the best things we've done, really, isn't it? Mm-hmm. We've had screenings before with our documentaries and things like that, but we had a lot of trouble trying to get a cinema to you know, take this on board, but we, to cut a long story short, we went with the Odeon, and they had a system whereby we could book it for a one-off screening. And we got the ball rolling with the media and the local businesses and everyone. They started spreading the word, as did my mum and various family members, you know, so it was a real homegrown promotion thing. But we were a bit worried because it was a 286 or 300 seater cinema, something like that, and we'd only sold 100 tickets at one point, and I was thinking, oh god, this is going to be a disaster. Anyway, to cut a long story short, we actually blew it up. It was actually crazy that people were coming up to the cinema from a 100 yards away saying, well, you know, what's all that noise? There was a storm that night as well. We were trying to get the media board into the cinema with all this howling gale and rain and everything. So it's quite a story, that in itself. But people were saying they heard all this, this crowd and all the noise. It was like a Marvel film, you know, not a little zero budget thing that we'd shot with one camera. But it was great, wasn't it?
It was a real buzz. I just loved it. And, you know, a lot of the cast members that were there just kept saying, oh, we want to do it all again.
I mean, I would say that, you know, to people making indie films, if you're a crew member or an actor, you know, you've got to turn up to your screenings. You really have, you know, just for the photos. And most of them that could made it for Do Something Jake, but it's not always the case. I've heard other filmmakers say, well, these actors just haven't turned up. You've got to turn up. This is what it's all about, you know, the promotion.
Get on the red carpet.
You've got to get on the red carpet. It's very, very important. And, you know, we got some great pictures from our events with Do Something Jake. And I think it's a great memories as well, you know. Mm. Big experience and a big thing for the actors. I mean, you know, it was pitch black in the theatre, and you see the, you know, massive great screen with those actors, most of whom no one had seen before, with 300 people watching them. That's what it's all about. And I think for actors, it was brilliant, wasn't
it? Really fantastic. And for us. I was a nervous wreck beforehand.
So with that one, it really looks unlike what I expect to see from a first feature film, in that you've kind of, it seemed to be, you've done everything wrong, right? So it looks really expansive, right? You've got lots of different locations, a big cast, and it seems, when I was watching this and I was thinking, this looks really big. And now I do remember on the email, you did say you made it with zero budget, because tell me about the length of the shoot, how long it took you, especially since the fact that you've kind of got the camera locked down on tripods. It's not necessarily all improvised as well. So it seems to me this could have been quite a long shoot.
It was a 3-week shoot. But it was very, very intense. I think it was the second day we were thinking, okay, we are just not going to get get this, all the scenes done that we wanted to get done. But James wielded his authority and got everything, you know, filmed that day that we needed to. And after that, just like tripped along nicely. But yes, you're right. We did everything wrong in making a zero budget film. It was normally supposed to be like two people in a room, isn't it? But I that was originally going to be the idea, but I just couldn't do it. I couldn't write that way. I just kept expanding and and in the end, it just became what it was. And we even had a feature
film, isn't it? It's a bit different. Yeah, I think you just forget just how much of a commitment and how big a project a feature film is. You know, short films are hard enough. People often ask us how you're able to produce all these feature films without proper funding and all that kind of thing. And I think part madness and part part method in the madness, really. I think there gets a point in a shoot where we've had this a few times. There's been points in the shoot where we've said we just can't go on like this. You know, having the camera sweeping gently across the room and DOPs fiddling with lights for 2 hours, and then and it's all wonderful and everything, but even on big Hollywood movies, someone has to say this isn't working. With the taxi meter's running, with the, you know, and all the dollars and pounds are flying out. So in our case, even with the zero budget film, we had people coming back from work in the apartments in which we were filming and things like that. You know, you there's always pressure. So you know, one of the techniques I use is that I take the camera and I operate the camera, and that cuts down the line of communication. So there's less chat and decisions to be made. Not everyone likes to work like this, but we often don't have any choice, and we just have to say we've got to get the film made within the schedule. And it's not going to be perfect, but as long as it reaches certain standards and you know you've got certain technical criteria met, then you should be all right. And I think that's how we've got the films made, including Do Something, Jake, was a very fine line. I think people were pretty shredded after it, and they were eyes popping out of their head and wondering what they'd got involved with. But you know, that is the nature of filmmaking, whether it's a Tarantino film or a little Do Something, Jake.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just a case of you find a whole different set of problems. You think when you make your next one, you think, oh, I've ironed all those out, that won't happen again. Instead, it's a whole new different load of problems that you come up against that you couldn't have predicted. When you're filming and when you're conceiving of this, is there a strict division of labour that you have here? So you've got Caroline as the writer, James as the director. How does it work on set? How does it work when the film's being developed?
Let me think. we do kind of like mix and mingle quite a bit. Certainly, you know, it's a collaboration on the writing. So so James will come up with a treatment and throw it at me, and I've got to try and make some sense of it and turn it into a screenplay. Then he'll have a pass of the screenplay and make some notes, and so, you know, back and forth like that. I deal with all the scheduling and the that side of things on set. Yeah, I don't have any. The only time I have anything to do with what James does is if somebody's not said something in the script that I want them to say, or if I have an opinion on.
Basically, if James screws up, then
basically Caroline, if James screws up, I jump it. Yeah,
Caroline will override. Any mistakes. So actually, we had that on this last film we did, Casting Kill. I can't remember what was going on there, but there's so much going on. But I made a comment on, well, I don't direct actors a lot, to be honest. Normally by the time they're on set, they know what they're doing and they can do it and they're very good. But I told this one actor to make it a little bit less to be a bit more naturalistic, a bit more free-flowing with her dialogue. But actually the script pertained to actually her being more formal, so you immediately stepped in and said, actually James, da, 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 da. So I profusely apologized to the actor and said, forget what I've just said, I'm only the director, and Caroline has overruled, but I'm happy to do that. You know, I mean, you can't think of everything, can you? And I'm operating the camera as well, so my mind is often frazzled. And Caroline, so we work as a little team whereby Caroline's really looking out for the editorial side and to some extent the acting performances. That noise you can hear is bottles being poured into a recycling thing because we're near a pub. But anyway, yes, so we work as a little team where Caroline is on the producing side, scheduling, organising the whole thing. And I try and, I think where I'm strongest is by visualising all of the scenes in my head and then looking ahead to the edit, which I guess is what a director does really. And that's, and, you know, so often it's very difficult to, on these small shoots, to, you know, be very detailed in terms of shot lists and even storyboards sometimes because things are so fluid. So I tend to have an overview of, a detailed overview in my head about what's happening. And then there's a certain number of shots we need to get and then a certain level of improvisation in the camera work and so on. So, you know, that's a balance that I try and get right. It's really difficult, but yeah, we work as a little team. And then everyone else, you know, the people that we work with normally hopefully know what they're doing. But on Casting Kill last one, it was great. Really, after a few days we were a finely honed team, and after the first few days chaos and worries, we settled into a good little team. I think you have to work as a team. This isn't really a game for people who are not team players. I think that's one thing that's really comes through after you've been in this a while, unless you're just like a single guy and wants to go and, you know, what would you call it, a solo filmmaker.
Yeah,
and there's a few of those dudes out there, and I'm sure they're really good, but generally it's a team job, isn't it?
So when you write, two things I noticed, or one thing I noticed in two of the films, is that the early scenes tend to be quite comic, particularly in Do Something Jake and Cyber Lante. And I wonder whether this is deliberate or whether you've recognised this as a trend in your own writing, that you've got these kind of quite comic early scenes where you're not quite sure where the storyline's going to go, and then it goes into something quite dark. Was that something you've noticed, or is that something you recognise, something you aim for, or just kind of happens naturally?
I don't think it's anything we aim for, is it? I think it just happens naturally. It's just obviously a little trend of ours that's unconscious. It's like the fact that we keep writing about serial killers, and I don't know why. But yeah, I mean, we like to inject a bit of humour into our films anyway, because life is full of humour. Even in the darkest moments, it can be humour. But yeah, it's a good point. I mean, to be honest, I don't think I've ever thought of it that way before. But
I think you know, the best way you can sort of build up a character, I think, is just to, you know, capture some of the everyday and Do Something Jake. You know, he's obviously a pretty unusual person, and he kept getting himself into the various fixes, and we wanted to try and convey that in a humorous way, and, you know, give people something to laugh about. But the strange thing about our humor in our films, which we try to build in, is it sometimes doesn't quite work out as we expected. So, for example, sitting in that big cinema, which is a hell of an experience, I have to say, you know, 300 people sitting there watching your work of art made on no money, is that they laugh in different places than you expect. You think, what on earth? And it's actually quite rewarding. You know, you think, oh God, they didn't laugh at that key moment, but then 10 minutes later they laugh at something that, you know, yeah, you didn't quite expect, but it's actually pretty cool that they did. So yeah, it's, you know, and I think that's a wonderful thing about theatrical screens, actually, you know, with all this streaming going on, you know, sitting on your bed watching Netflix with your headphones on is great to one degree, but I think, yeah, as a filmmaker, get into the theatre.
Yeah.
So tell me about Cyber Lante then, because I think you mentioned, Caroline, in our correspondence that this was made, you kind of improvised this as you were going along?
Yeah, that was another crazy film that we kind of, well, it was pulled together in 1 week, because the original film we were going to make, we had to abandon because our DOP abandoned the shoot after day two and took all the film equipment with him because he owned the film equipment. So not ones to be defeated, we thought, right, well, how can we turn this in into a good, you know, something good? We need to do something. So we decided to shoot on a phone, and we, James came up with a plot overnight, and we pulled it together and cast it in within a week, and then just started filming, as you do. And so yes, we were, a lot of the times we were writing as we went along. We'd meet different people or come up with different scenarios that we think, okay, well, this could work well in the plot. And we just had a go doing it that way, rather than coming away empty-handed because of the abandoned original shoot. We thought at least we can get something.
Very fluid again. Yeah. And, you know, you do, one does what one has to when you're up against it or you haven't got a lot of money. And you know, so a lot of the actors you see in the film are just people that just happen to be in the hotel or in a building or in a restaurant, cafe, and they wanted to have a go. And then a couple of actors, Gavin Gordon, the lead actor, is an excellent actor. He's obviously a professional, but we mixed it up with, so it was, I guess you could say it's a real regional, local effort, and it's, I quite like it. You know, I'm ultra critical about my own work. I'm always looking to do better, as, you know, as you should do, I guess. But for some reason, I quite like it. I think it kind of melds together. It's got this sort of urban grungy thing going on. The music by Don Russo, he's pretty, you know, he's into that kind of sound that I don't know a lot about. And so we kind of spliced the music, this urban music against it, and I think it works quite well. And I'm very happy about some of the comments that I've had from people about it as well. They see something different in it, again, a bit like Agent Kelly, and things that you don't expect.
Yeah, and so another one of this, I don't know, obviously I noticed that thing about the humour, that was just something that came to me from watching those two films. But there's these themes of surveillance that seems to go across the films, three I've watched any today anyway. They're all based on some idea of surveillance or people being tracked. And you've got a film called Surveilled as well. So tell us the storyline to that, whether that's consciously building on what you've done in the past or whether it's just this kind of generic trend that you're in at the moment.
Yeah, we do seem to, I did mention this the other day, that we seem to be making a lot of films about, you know, voyeurs.
Yeah, I like to think it's not because I've got some voyeuristic streak, but because I like Rear Window with yes. Hitchcock film. Wasn't it? I don't know. I think it's just one of those, yeah. I think it's the kind of films we tend to watch, isn't it?
Yeah,
those kind of either espionage-y thrillers or there's a weird guy next door kind of, they're always captivating. And I think... you tend to think that they're going to be easy to film, but in Do Something Jake, we had the guy looking through the air vent down in at various things to the next door neighbour. But of course, in the film, he's looking down, but we actually had to film the guy about a mile down the road in a sort of old decrepit building. And you had to worry about all the angles and where he was looking and certain points of the script and so on. So, yeah, it's a challenge more than you think making a film like that.
Yeah, it? I mean, with Surveilled, as you say, it's I don't think that film was kind of inspired by a Crime Watch program that James watched about some heinous serial killer down on the South Coast, and we started to think. Well, James started to think. Well, what would I do if I saw some unusual behaviour and think I'd found the identity of a serial killer? And then we expanded on that idea and said, well, what if that happened? But he didn't call it in. He started following the serial killer. So yeah, that's where that idea germinated from. And it was going to be a much bigger, more expansive film. But in the end, we stripped it right back, cut out some characters and... tried to cut out some locations and shot it on a phone again. So so that's how that one came about. We did crowdfund for that one. We got a small amount of money that we could pay for, you know, the basics with. Again, we just went out and shot it and hoped for the best.
Yeah, we had a premiere in Southend, wasn't it? That was the world premiere.
Yeah, the Horror on Sea Film Festival.
Horror on Sea, great festival, Southend, if you people want to go to that, it's brilliant. It was really rewarding once again to see it on the big screen with an audience, and they seemed to be really captivated. Of course, I was sitting there looking at all the what I consider to be the bad bits, but of course the audience were just interested in the story, you know. That was gratifying, wasn't it?
Yeah. Pretty cool. Yeah, it was. But you know, again, okay, we haven't had a tiny amount of money for this. It was, you know, like sub micro budget, and again, we did everything wrong by having big expansive locations, an international cast, people flying in from all over the planet, and a very convoluted story. So just can't write simple films and simple stories.
So where are your films? They mostly for on streaming. They do well at festivals, and they seem to do quite well at festivals. What kind of response are you getting in terms of the sales, in terms of people who you don't know who've responded to your films?
Yeah, pretty good, actually. Especially with Agent Kelly recently, that's a big surprise, that, because suddenly in America that seemed to be trending and on Tubi. There's various channels over there. And the answer to your question is, I suppose it's just always surprising and often gratifying what is actually happening with these films, which, let's face it, are not filmed with big facilities and big crews or anything like that. And it just opened, I think the world has opened up to looking at media in a different way, looking at feature films in a different way. And if you're shooting on a phone feature film, or you're shooting in IMAX, the 70mm or 35mm, it's all good, you know. And I think that's what's come through. So yes, we have had some really, amongst the trolls and the nutters out there who are going to always badmouth you, or, you know, people get jealous or whatever, you know, you get that. But generally there's been a very positive response to what we're doing, and I don't know why. I think it's probably because essentially we're story people, first and foremost, you know. So we don't do, our films don't exist just to shock. There is fundamentally, we're trying to get a story across and trying to keep people interested in that. So we're not, we like to think we're not sort of gimmicky, are we?
No, we just tell stories. We like to write, you know, well-rounded characters, complex characters, as you would in real life. But no, the response, you know, when you do get people, complete and utter strangers, popping up and saying, oh, I just saw this, your film, and I really loved it, you know, that's amazing. That's so gratifying.
It is gratifying, really, isn't it? And sometimes they mention our films in the context of other big films. They say, oh yeah, I saw, you know, I don't know, Suspiria, or, you know, Rear Window, they said, oh, something like that. And we think, blimey, to be even be mentioned in the same vein as those bigger films is privilege, really, isn't it? Yeah. So I think, I mean, you do get toughened in this business by criticism, and you need to deal with it. I think David Wilde in the podcast, he was talking about, I was thinking, you know, how do you do, I haven't actually seen the particular thing, but how do you deal with criticism? But that's something I knocked on the head years ago. You know, you just take it on the chin and move on, because if you don't move on, then they win, you know. And I, you know, that's it. And if you can't do that, then maybe this business isn't for you. You need to, because otherwise it will affect your, you know, if people will criticize you, and if you let that affect you, then that's not good for you. It's not good for anything. So you got to move on, you know. And if you're really letting it get to you, then you shouldn't, and maybe it isn't for you, don't you think?
Yeah. No.
Because there's some nasty people out.
Yeah, I mean, and you just got to remember that there's, you know, that these are nasty people, and you know, if they can't say something, just one kind word about your film, even if they hated it, you know, then, you know, you just got to ignore them, because they're the losers, and we'll keep on anyway. We'll keep on, carry on regardless, you know. The more you criticize, the more we'll just keep trying to get better and better, and keep going. So
yeah, the indie film crowd are used to all this, and they, you know, they're
we all get it.
Everyone gets it, and Yeah, I've noticed that the film critics, and that's a difficult business being a film critic, film journalist. And I follow quite a few of them at different levels, you know, right up from Variety down to the, you know, blogs and things like that. Really tough job, and they get criticized as well. And then the fireworks really start to happen. You know, there's all sorts of tweets firing back and forth. It's surprising how they work as well, because they have almost like collectives. They get together and they say, are we saying this is a good film or not a good film? So it'll be about a group of critics will get together and make a collective decision so that they don't individually look bad. I don't agree with that. I think that's horrendous, but things like that you pick up in this business.
So just back to what you were saying, your films remind other people of bigger films. Agent Kelly reminds me of Haywire, the Steven Soderbergh film.
Love that.
Because obviously they're running through the streets, and I think they're in Barcelona in that film for kind of a 10-minute sequence as well. So it definitely had that feel to it, which I should have said earlier, actually.
Thank you very much. We'll take that as a great...
No, there's another connection as well, though, because it's like Soderbergh does a lot of experimenting, and he's moved into the phone filmmaking as well, right? So there's a kind of a little parallel there, I guess, as well. So let's wrap it up. Do you want to tell us about... your new film that's coming out? Is it Cast and Kill? It's either out or it's coming out soon. And then about, is it Geezer that you are talking Best Geezer?
Best Geezer, yeah.
Let me ask that question again so I don't look stupid then, all right? So I'll ask that question because it looks like I've done my research. I'm sorry about that. Okay, so to wrap this up then, do you want to tell us about Cast and Kill that's coming out either now or shortly, and the film that you're crowdfunding for at the moment, which is called Best Geezer?
Yeah, well, I'll leave Best Geezer to Caroline. So Cast and Kill, we shot in London in 6 days, almost killed me. And we've got all sorts of funny stories. But it's great to shoot in London. We got some really nice scenic stuff, worked with some brilliant actors. And it's kind of like a Hitchcockian horror. It's horror thriller. And it's just filmed in a couple of locations. And it's in post-production at the moment. I'm been battered around a bit, and I've got my feet on the ground, but I am pretty excited about this one because I think the main thing is it's going to be very entertaining to see on the big screen. It's got a fantastic sort of orchestral soundtrack, music score, the makeup and the costumes are really beautiful, and the actors can really do it, you know, and I think they really shone. The pressure of filming, you know, the story of us, how we did this will come out, but I think the pressure that we were under to film all this in 6 days, you know, there's so many ups and downs and things going wrong and right and some happy accidents, but that added to what we have, and it is very dynamic in places, and I think everyone gelled as a team. So yeah, that'll be coming out this year, and so people just look at the Rare Films website and social media, and then we got Best Geezer, which we hope to film this year as well then.
Yeah, Best Geezer, we did a crowdfunding campaign for it, didn't raise as much as we wanted to, so we have to go back to the basics and do the zero budget job and use the money that we have got for locations, catering, you know, the basics. But that's going to be shot down in Essex. And that's about a group of hapless corporate video filmmakers who have a dream to make a Geezer movie. And it's a bit of the parallels, I guess, are with the Full Monty. So it's comedy, obviously. It's like the Full Monty without the stripping, unfortunately. Basically, it's a Men in Strife film. Yeah, it's feel good. It's got a lot of music and dancing in it. And it's going to be a whole lot of fun.
It is going to be a lot of fun. I grew up in the Essex South. It's going to be shot in Southend, Canvey Island area, where I grew up as a kid and got up to all sorts of mischief. But there's also kind of a good degree of dry humour down there, a little bit like the East End, the Cockney kind of humour, but with a different slant. So we're going to, I would just feel it's like on home ground, that one. That'd be a lot of fun. And I think we're already gathering some super actors, really great people. I'm pretty confident now. Having having had our battles over the years since Do Something Jake, I think, you know, we can feel excited because it feels like we're more confident and we're finding our way. And yeah, we're poised to make some good stuff, I think. So
regarding casting Kill, I've seen a lot of stuff on Twitter with your cast being really excited about having worked on it. Has it always been a really kind of nice atmosphere on set with the cast? Do you find you get on well with cast and actors? It seems to be you've got a really good relationship, an ongoing relationship with your cast. I know you've used some cast in different films, so they've returned. So have you found that your relationship with cast and it has been good?
Yeah, I would say, I suppose I better answer this as a director who's normally right in front of them, pointing the camera. But yeah, I think generally, yes. I mean, you know, there are, you don't make, how many films have you made?
Five
feature films without there being some fractious moments, and there have been. But, you know, with experience and with people being sensible, we normally, you know, are friends by the, well, we're always friends by the time we leave the film set. But most of the people are absolutely fantastic, you know. Yeah, we've had some disagreements, but we find our way through it, and you have to. There's no feature film that's made where everyone gets on absolutely perfectly, I don't think. Having said that, casting feels pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I think the people, the main thing actors have to do and crew when they're working on these kinds of films is understand the pressures and the difficulties that the directors and producers are going through. Having without that support from big institutions like the BBC and all that, they have to understand that. Because if they don't, then they won't understand the difficulties and the challenges that are faced that are different from that kind of filmmaking. So yeah, we generally have a very good relationship, don't we?
And yeah, we had a wrap party with the cast of Casting Kill, and actually that was the first wrap party we've ever had, isn't it?
Well, we actually
attended. We're able to attend. We actually were sensible this time and had the wrap party a couple of days after we'd finished, or a week later after we'd finished filming. So we were able to attend that at this point. We had a blast. I mean, it was great fun. And everybody pitched up and enjoyed it. And those that could.
It's good. Great people out there. Some really good, you know, people talk about in the industry about emerging talent and great new. Mm. But we, you know, at all levels that exists. And I just think with films like ours and, you know, the people that are making films like ours, these actors can show what they can do, and they have done, and they are doing so. So that's rewarding as well.
What would you say you've learned most about making films? How has your filmmaking developed? What have you become more confident at? And what do you still want to develop?
I know what I want to happen is for me to relax and enjoy it better. I keep meaning to. Enjoy the actual film shoot, but I tend to be running around doing 12 things at once and with my hair on fire. But, you know, and each time I say, right, the next film shoot, everything's going to be perfectly organised, and I'm going to relax and I'm going to enjoy it. And I think what I'm learning at the moment is scheduling. The scheduling, it needs to be a bit more less stressful, less packed in for me personally. So that's my main goal for the next film.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good but difficult question that you asked there, you know. But I think for me, it's like, you know, I guess what I've learned is don't beat yourself up so much. You know, I mean, I look at my films in the edit suite and think, oh, maybe we should bury this and, you know, not go on to the next one and things like that. I suppose that in a way I've made the right decisions over the years not to do that. Just put them out there anyway. Make sure you put them out there. Don't beat yourself up too much. That's what, and also there is no perfect feature film out there. I mean, I see some horrendous bloopers in so-called lauded, amazing British and American feature films. And I think, how could they possibly let that cut go through? How could, you know, and it's a really big film. So, you'd you know, have confidence in yourself, I think, is what I, you know, in what you're doing creatively. As long as you're working at it and you're thinking about it, put it out there, because the audience are seeing different things. They're not seeing all your mistakes and things that you think are wrong. They're seeing other stuff. So that is the main thing.
James and Caroline, thanks very much for joining me. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Fantastic.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, thank you for inviting
us. Great.
Thanks again to Caroline Spence and James Smith of Raya Films, and thanks to you for listening. And if you want to, you can listen to my other interviews with directors, including Andrew Jones, Andrew Elias, Tom Lee Rutter, Charlie Steed, and Trash Arts, at where you found this podcast. Newton Talks will return.